It's 11 o'clock, and you are tuned to Royalton Community Radio, WFVR-LP, in South Royalton, Vermont. It's a Thursday. It's time for Green Zine. Why don't we visit with the bird here for just a bit? A little bit of a samba feel to this opening music piece. Henry Swayze will be joining me in just a couple minutes, and we've got a very interesting visit with Vermont law professor Jenny Carter coming up in about 20 minutes. Get your samba shoes on.
In the morning haze, I'm working on a red soil path covered with orange flowers and leaves. Sun appears and blooms into yellow dewdrops on both my cheeks. In a foggy forest, giant trees, their green leaves bathing with the same drops of light. Blue sky turns into an indigo sail.
Yes, this is Green Zine, and that piece of music is called L'Oiseau, the bird. Green Zine is brought to you today, as usual here at Free Vermont Radio, by Soloflect, Bale, Royal Trail Works, Daniel Leibowitz, the Upper Pass Beer Company, First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest, and the White River Land Collaborative. Yeah, this piece, in case you're looking for it, is out on the Putumayo label, and we do carry the Putumayo World Music Show on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. This is Marianne Perudin and Thomas Artaud, and once again, the piece is called L'Oiseau. Well, Henry, have you been checking out some birds lately there in your various travels?
Yeah, I went from being a bird to listening to the birds. So I have been gliding and had a couple lovely trips up the Connecticut River and deep into the White Mountains. And my last one didn't end so well. I landed up landing in a tree instead of on terra firma. And no harm to me whatsoever, except for the fact that that I was still 30 feet in the air and given very strict instructions by everyone I talked to about not trying to climb out of the airplane and shinny down a tree. He says that's the way people get hurt when they get hung up in a tree. So
How long did you have to hang out up there? And were you in kind of an upside down, uncomfortable position in the plane?
When you're sitting in a glider, you're kind of you're lounging back with your butt and your back parallel to the ground, kind of like a recumbent bicycle or something.
Yes.
And when I came to a halt in the tree canopy, my plane was pointing absolutely nose down to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So I was basically hanging from my seatbelt, and you have two over the shoulder harnesses in a flying, actually all planes. The captain of your jetliners are wearing those too. The sun was shining on me. I had my canopy closed, so I was getting cooked. So I opened my canopy so I wouldn't cook.
No.
And then I had to undo my lap belt because I was just basically being supported by that belt around my waist. It was uncomfortable, and it was making it so that I was starting to black out.
Yes.
I can't do that. I have to wait a while to get someone here to get me out of the tree. And so anyway, I undid that, and then I had to say, all right, well, now how do I make it so I don't fall out of this plane? I thought I had about 18 feet to the ground, but once I got on the ground, I realized I was probably more like 25 or 30 feet in the air.
Right.
So falling, that wouldn't have been good. So I got in the best position I could, but I had to use a lot of leg muscles kind of bracing me in position and continue to hold on with my hands in case something that I was my weight was on were to give way. And so by the time I got down on the ground, I was totally without muscles. Barely could walk out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. How long were you, and you were able to contact authorities and kind of tell them this had happened?
I very luckily, I mean, I was on high ground. I was in the greenhouse. I was on what's called the Hogback Mountain. And it looks like a rack of pork. It's a white cliff line.
Okay.
And there was, I wasn't right on the cliff. I was in the trees just beyond it. But I had cell phone coverage, and I also had radio. I had my glider radio. But I used the cell phone to come up with an exact GPS location. I dropped a pin on a Google map.
There you go.
And then I shared that with 911 and said, well, I'm stuck in a glider, hung up here, and they had my phone number because I texted them is how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
So that they get the GPS locations, and I text my glider club, and so I had three people walk in from the glider club, which took them probably almost 3.5 hours to get there.
Wow!
Because it was quite a drive, and then a hike in as well.
Yeah, because this was in a pretty remote area. It's not like you were near a major state road or anything.
No, this was remote. The Haverhill Fire Department, they arrived with their rescue team, a bunch of rope climbers, and did a very competent job of getting me harness on, and I had a place in my airplane I could thread a rope through, and I threaded that through it and hooked onto my carabiner that they had sent up, and they gave me a ride down to the ground. so tough on the airplane. There was no impact at all. Once they get the airplane out of the tree, it probably won't be salvageable because it's going to do it more damage to come out of the tree than I probably did landing in the tree.
Yeah, yeah. So as we close this, first of all, we're glad that you're okay and you're with us. You are an adventurer and a risk taker. I've known you for a long time. What was my closing thought? I think that when you had that carabiner on and you were being really careful and everything, that still it was kind of an adventure. And did you smile at all when they lowered you back down to the ground?
I'm not sure I did. My muscles were really hurting at that point. In fact, when I got my feet on the ground, I wasn't sure I was going to be able
able to walk and then have to get out of there.
And I had about 3/4 mile walk out. It was bushwhacking, and it was up steep hill and then down again, and it wasn't easy walking.
Yeah.
But you know, I got good help and fishing game and national forest and sheriff's office. Everyone showed up there. I don't know how many people were there. I didn't ever see them all, but the people right under the airplane, I probably had 8 or 9 people.
Yeah, the picture shows all those folks. But you did have time while waiting, I think, that you made note of some birds that were hanging out near you.
Yeah, I eventually got to the point where I said, well, I guess I might as well enjoy the view. It was very pretty where I was.
Yeah.
And even though it was a little terrifying because I was basically had my weight on my instrument panel, kind of like sitting on the steering wheel in a car, nosedive, you know, with a car dangling over a cliff or something. And I started to thought, well, I might as well enjoy myself. I'm here. And so I had a bird, actually two birds singing at me. And I got out my phone. I looked for the bird. I never actually saw it. I saw a little bit of movement. But anyway, I saw what is a beautiful bird, a warbler. And our bird note will let you hear about that warbler.
Okay, let's go to bird note. You are listening to Henry Swayze. My name is Todd, and this is Green Zine. Let's check in with bird note.
This is Bird Note. Justine Bowe fell in love with birds when she was a kid on a hike in New Hampshire with her dad.
He kept saying to me, oh, I hope we see a Blackburnian warbler. I hope we see a Blackburnian warbler. We did the whole hike. I don't know how long it was. Felt like an eternity to me. Didn't see it. And then we were about to exit the trail, and then he heard the call. And we saw it above us, and it's a really striking bird. It's fiery orange and black and white, and it was super captivating and a really beautiful surprise.
Today, Justine manages the bird-friendly coffee program at the Smithsonian Institute's Migratory Bird Center, working with coffee farmers to preserve habitat for birds that migrate to Central and South America. And when visiting some of those farms in Colombia,
I got to see the same Blackburnian warblers that I see at home. And it's just this really interesting and kind of beautiful mirror image of what we're doing here in the States. You know, we're looking at the same birds. I got to sip coffee sitting under a bird-friendly canopy, thinking about that interconnectivity between the species that connect us and the same coffee that we're drinking. It's a pretty moving thing.
You can learn more about bird-friendly coffee on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Well, I like that, Henry. It makes me think of a song that, Seth. Anyway, May Erlewine and Seth Bernard, he has a great song about the coffee lands and the birds. I'll play that on my next show, but you heard the Blackburnian warbler. Were you able to see it?
No, I didn't. There was actually also a black-throated warbler, blue warbler, which I guess is also quite a spectacular bird.
Wow.
And it was just my my phone app was telling me that that's what was singing. And I tried to see it, and I caught a little bit of movement in the foliage, but I had a lot of tree around me, it was it wasn't. I never actually got a good view of it. Didn't pack my binoculars.
Yeah. Hey, are we able to? Yeah, you've really got quite adept about posting links and stuff. Are we? I don't know about the legalities of this, but are we allowed to, or are capable of posting this, at least this photo from BirdNote of the Blackburnian Warbler? We're a radio show, so we're all about audio. But I think that folks that hear that call and then actually able to see the bird, is that something that maybe we could do in the future?
I will do that. I will make that happen after the show today.
Okay,
I posted one picture of the spring foliage coming out, so I know I can get pictures into this website.
Yeah, that would be
the
great.
Links.
So I've been, before we move on from birds, you told me all about the Cornell Labs Merlin app, and we now have it on two devices, and I've been keeping track along with my partner of the birds immediately on our property. I mean, we were in Maine and we're listening to some similar birds but different birds up there, and up to 30, it's either 31 or 32 different birds that we've heard in the quarter to a third of a mile range of where I've been using the app. Very impressive.
So when you're in Maine, you're at an edge. You're between the sea and the land.
Yeah.
And those edges is where you get all your biodiversity.
Yeah.
And that's way more birds than I have at my house in Tunbridge. I bet more birds than you have in your hikes even around Tunbridge.
Well, that number I just gave you is from Tunbridge.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was.
Yeah.
Not your main site.
No, up there, that's different. So we are kind of on the edge of the woods, and I noticed that I forget what the full name of the bird is, but a yellow throat. I was down near our barn the other day, and I heard a unique sound, and I got out Merlin and said, "Merlin, do your thing." And it said it was a yellow throat. I don't know if that's a type of swallow, but darned if I didn't see a little movement on the ground 10 feet away from me. And that bird, clearly, I'd never seen that bird before, but it had a yellow throat. So that was interesting that those two things happened within 20 seconds of each other. And I moved a little bit to get a closer look at this bird on the ground, and it did not fly away. So got a photo of that. I'll send that to you later, Henry.
Wow. Yeah, those little zippy birds don't usually hold still for photographs.
No, and it clearly knew I was there. Hey, we're almost coming up on time to visit with our guests, but I think we could squeeze in one thing before we get up to 20 after 11. Anything brief that you want to mention?
Well, let's put one of the things that we're going to do afterwards. UN chief calls for a worldwide ban of advertising from fossil fuel industry.
Ooh, I like that.
And I think that's pretty interesting. This is the head of the UN has said, okay, enough of this greenwashing you fossil fuel people do. And it's a worldwide problem. I mean, they've been so instrumental in confusing the role of fossil fuels in climate change so that people don't take action on it. And they've known about it, and I guess we'll roll on to another thing, a piece of legislation that we thought the governor was going to veto and did not. And that's to build a super fund in Vermont that the fossil fuel companies have to pay into every year to help reimburse the Vermont government for their costs caused by climate change. And my guess is that they will never get them for the real costs. But at least there'll be a drop in the bucket, and the fossil fuel industry will be on notice that that their economic model is going to be very bad if they continue to pollute. They really have to change to being an energy company that's being more sustainable than the burning of things.
Yeah, and you know, we might come back to that story and link it with a story coming out of New York City and the governor of New York State as far as a term and a policy that is apparently not going to happen called congestion pricing. We'll get to that in the third. You are listening to Green Zine. It's 20 minutes now past the hour of 11 o'clock. And while Henry rounds up our guests today, and it's going to be a very interesting discussion, I want to tell you about some other things that are happening really soon here in our area. I want to thank an assistant producer who listens to the show on a regular basis for passing this along. And actually, it involves a group that we have talked to before, someone who's also been involved with the law school, Jennifer Byrne, who is part of, actually, she is the district manager for the White River Natural Resources Conservation District. And she is announcing a couple of very interesting things coming up in the next week, both of them within a week. On Sunday, June 9th, so that's just a couple days away, from 5:30 to 7:30, the WRNRCD, ooh, that's a lot of alphabet soup there, is going to kick off their Dirt and Democracy Summer Series, focusing on building a democratic agrarian social movement. Boy, it sounds like I'm back in like the 1890s with Fightin' Bob La Follette. Every other Sunday evening starting this week, including this coming Sunday, join them online or in person with watch parties throughout the state to learn from agrarian movement leaders from around the globe. The first guest will be James Mumm, M-U-M-M. And we can learn about the history of farmers alliances and the populist movement in America. If you're part of a Grange here in the state of Vermont, get the word out to your fellow Grange members. I think they'd be very interested in that. And then next Wednesday, right here in South Royalton, Wednesday, June 12th from 4 to 7 p.m., join the district, the Conservation District, right on the green in South Royalton for their 84th birthday celebration. At this event, they'll have soil science stations, music, cake, and food available from our buddy Nando, his Moon and Stars food truck. Also have a limited selection of nut trees for sale. So you can find out more about both of these events by going to this website, White River MRCD. White River M, as in Michael, RCD.org. And, we'll look to see some of you maybe out there on the green next week or see you online for the Dirt and Democracy series happening every other Sunday evening throughout the summer. Let's see if Henry's been able to make a connection. Are you there, Henry? I don't hear Henry. Okay. Well, we might go to another item. We might go back to music. Oh, I'll make up my mind here. Yeah, let's play a little bit of this here, and then we'll see if Henry joins us. This is called Il Sole e Me, translated as Sunshine, from the Mediterranean Cafe from the Putumayo label. Henry, are you with us now? Oh, he must be having trouble getting through on the phone.
Apro le finestre per farla entrare in sole ci sarà.
All right, I'm going to bring that down and see if Henry's with us. And if not, we'll go to another story. Henry, are you out there? Don't worry, he's not back up in that tree. He'll be okay. We're going to go to this story, and Henry and Jenny will hear me when they do get connected, and they can just jump right in. Well, I get a newsletter from Green Car Reports on a daily basis, mostly about EVs and development and chargers, etc. And I was struck by this headline because I was just reading about modern-day Manhattan in New York City about electric, about what's going to happen or not happen with congested pricing, and we'll get more into that. Henry, am I hearing you now?
Yeah, we're back. I have Jenny Carter. We were having a little bit of sort out of getting sound to work.
Okay.
And doing a little bit of catching up on she turns out when she was at the Vermont Law School, she lived right between my brother's house and my house.
Really?
In Tunbridge. I'm on the other side of the woods from where she was, but still have a house there. So, Jenny Carter, welcome to Green Scene.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, great to have you with us.
And just for our listeners, Jenny has really been, went to Vermont Law School and has now come back and is teaching there in the Institute for Energy and the Environment. But she has had quite a trip in her career doing environmental things, getting Massachusetts to adopt the California car emissions regulations, getting LIHEAP in Vermont, maybe other places, I'm not sure, to tighten up houses and deal with improving efficiency of our energy usage. And I guess you, I don't know exactly your role, but I know that you were involved with making Efficiency Vermont actually count as a utility and come into life so that it could help people learn how to save electricity and save energy instead of just using more of it and, you know, running the wood stove with the windows open.
Right. Yes, that was a long time ago and something I'm very proud of, and that has been a really big success.
Yes, it's I mean, the Vermont. So you did that with the Vermont energy utility. That was
so. Back at that point in time, I was working for VPIRG. I was the legislative and policy director at VPIRG, and of course, we worked with a whole number of entities came together to support the creation of the efficiency utility in Vermont. I can only claim we were the lead environmental advocates on that bill, but a lot of credit goes to Rich Cowart, who was the chair of the PUC at the time.
Yeah, amazing, and that set the pace for other states to do the same thing. We were most successful version of that that's happened, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't say I have done a comprehensive survey of all the other states, but I can say that I think it's been a big success in Vermont, and there are a lot of terrific people who work at Efficiency Vermont who are very, very dedicated to they're playing their role in the green transition.
Okay. Well, with that background, I just want to we'll get into the discussion. I really wanted to get into was Vermont legislature has done really got in gear this year and attempted to a lot of environmental lawmaking, and in particular has done work on a greener grid and trying to make a path for getting off of fossil fuel. And some of those have been vetoed and need to be overridden. And the holding utilities accountable, we just mentioned that before I got you on air, and getting a Superfund built from the fossil fuel. The governor was thought to veto that, but didn't. And I wonder if you have a sense of what was important in the work we did, and is it enough, and how do we ramp it up? That's really where I'd like to go.
That's pretty broad.
Okay. So where do we start with that? I think start at the state level, and there has been a lot of legislation that's passed in the last few years. We've had a very proactive legislature, for you know, which I am I personally am grateful for. And so the big issue this year has been the renewable energy standard. Although I would like to point out that addressing climate change takes many forms, and electricity production is one of them. And I, you know, am really looking forward to talking about that. But I'd also like to give a shout out to the legislature and to environmental groups and to housing groups for the work they've done over the last couple of years of trying to bring disparate interests together to address our affordable housing crisis in a way that protects the environment and I think is critical in addressing climate change issues. And the legislation I'm talking about encourages infill development in our downtown areas and eases some of the permitting burdens for that. And the real significance of that is that it addresses climate change on so many fronts. It addresses transportation emissions, which are the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions in Vermont. And it addresses transportation emissions by locating housing in downtown areas where people can walk to work, they can walk to the store, they can walk to, you know, walk their kids to school. So that is really important from a greenhouse gas perspective, as well as making Vermont a more livable place. So there are a lot of ways that the legislature can have an impact, and I think that's a really important one to call out. And plus, I always like to at least start off with a note of optimism about where we're heading. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that legislation plays out in ensuring more housing in Vermont and in the downtown areas. And importantly, the legislature is putting their money where their mouth is with that, as well as directing funds towards low-income and moderate-income housing and energy efficiency measures. So big picture, we do have some really positive things happening. I would also say from the federal level, there has been an unprecedented amount of money put towards new technologies and, you know, helping, once again, in the transportation sector, helping the shift over to lower polluting vehicles, such as electric vehicles, as well as they put a significant amount of money into downtown housing and affordable housing as well. So starting off on a bright note, you know, there's a lot to be proud of what Vermont's done and, you know, sort of where the federal administration has tried to take us.
Yeah.
That brings us to We always have a lot more to do, and it's nowhere near enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you kind of look for the big levers in stepping forward, and I agree with you that getting compact downtowns, I mean, the energy footprint of someone living in Manhattan is way lower than the energy footprint of me living out on a dirt road in Tunbridge, because I have that transportation burden. You know, for me, a supermarket is a real supermarket is 35 minutes away. And Tunbridge General Store is open and operating again, but for a while that wasn't there.
I'm glad to hear that. I did not know that was back up and running.
Oh yeah. It's up and running. You know, and just to stick with the housing and the transportation in a rural state, we know, and we've talked about this on the show in the past, that Vermont not only has one of the older populations, but certainly has some of the oldest housing stock, and I would say most inefficient to heat and maintain housing stock in the country. So as this transition to, as you say, infill in villages and even smaller cities, Vermont doesn't really have many cities, is that stock, which is, you know, deteriorating and will probably end up not even being part of the housing portfolio, will go away. And I'm assuming that new housing built in these village centers will be very efficient as far as their use of energy. So that trade-off should be a real positive as far as diminished, climate change issues from housing.
Well, that is certainly our hope. There is an efficiency standard that new housing has to adhere to. And once again, it could be stronger, of course, for new construction. But there are also quite a few incentives out there, both federal and state, for making new housing construction more energy efficient. And actually right now, the Department of Public Service is in the process of developing a couple of proposals to submit back to the feds on how to spend, it's roughly $60 million in Vermont for energy efficiency in the housing sector, as well as there's an additional chunk of money that came from Bernie Sanders' Solar for All program. So people ought to be on the lookout for how they might take advantage of those programs.
Mm-hmm. How will they watch for that?
In the news, I'll put in a plug for Vermont Digger. Vermont Digger does
a great
job in covering the environmental news in the state. I don't know, and it's something I'd like to check into. Whether there's a sign-up list, and they certainly should have that. If they don't at the Department of Public Service, for sort of a sign-up list where people could ask to be on an alert for the progress on those funding. So actually, that's something I'll be happy to take up with them.
I do see that there is a homesrewiringamerica.org calculator that's how much can you get in electrification incentives, so that part of it. But I don't know how that responds to, whether that gets out to building a well-insulated house or...
That's a really terrific tool, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. It is a great place to start. I wouldn't stop there because it's not possible for them to have everything and to always be the most up-to-date, but it's really a terrific place to start.
I will put that in our links that come along on the website for the show for you listeners. So stepping forward, what do we've sort of stuck a needle in the side of the fossil fuel industry saying, hey, you're going to pay for some of these damages. which they'll fight in court and drag out, but nonetheless. What are any other big levers that you see that are kind of next steps that we should do to try to really reverse the renewable by whatever days, 2030, 2035, zero emissions, all these things tend to get perverted and greenwashed and not really be what they, quite as good as they sound as though they are.
Well, the greenwashing is always good for a whole other series of shows.
Indeed.
And to be honest, it's a favorite topic of many of our students. At the state level, right now, the Renewable Energy Standard legislation, H-289, is the big move that is in play. It will up the state's game in terms of its renewable energy standard and what utilities have to do to comply with it. As your listeners may know, the governor vetoed it, and it is scheduled for a veto override in the legislature. So if your listeners are looking for something to do on that particular issue, I would suggest that they get in contact with some of our statewide environmental organizations. If you're on the other side, some of the statewide conservative organizations, but that is going to be, that's the most significant legislation that's pending in Vermont right now. I always recommend to people strategically, I can't help as sort of working for the law school, as a spokesperson for the law school, I need to kind of retain my independence. But as a longtime advocate, I always encourage people to get involved in the electoral process and the legislative process. And so I would encourage people, if this is something you really care about, think strategically. If your representative and senator already agree with your position, think about, kind of maybe you've got a friend in a neighboring town that has a legislator that doesn't share your position. Think about how you might help them in their districts, persuading their legislator to vote in a way that's consistent with your values.
Right. And just so folks know, we're not that far away. The legislature is returning to the Golden Dome on June the 17th to address whether they are able to override a couple of the governor's vetoes. So if you've got a senator in mind, and just to go to your point, Jenny, I did see outgoing Senator Dick McCormick the other day in the parking lot at the drugstore, and I would guess that don't bother Dick. I think he's already made up his mind on probably, not that I brought it up directly with him, but with his background, I think he'll vote to override.
Yes, he's been a stalwart over the years. It's a huge loss that Dick is retiring, but because he has been, there's no one who's been a stronger environmental advocate, over the last few decades than Dick McCormick. So, we'll still hear from him, even if he's not listening.
Oh, yeah. You might even be hearing from him here on the radio station. We've had him on as a guest, and he's toying with the idea of becoming a member of our staff. All volunteer, Dick. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
Maybe we'll get more folk music out of him.
Yeah, we definitely will. He's got his guitar. Hey, could we get more into, and I think this is still under the Renewable Energy Standard, if it does indeed become law, what is happening in the world when you said the utilities are going to have to show how they're going to get to these goals, et cetera? How is that larger picture with big, big solar projects, big wind? Obviously, we've got Hydro-Quebec coming in as a major energy source for the state of Vermont. How is this, the smaller not maybe not so small as the microgrids, and we have talked about that. But as far as some of the community solar projects and group net metering projects, are they withstanding some of these changes, or what's kind of happening in that byplay?
Well, I think what's happening with group net metering is one of the sad stories in Vermont. In terms of our move towards solar, community solar was, I think, finding its place in Vermont. And it was really, what was terrific about community solar, as you mentioned, or group net metering, was it allowed people who own their own homes don't have appropriate rooftop or appropriate land for solar. But even people who leased, because what was great about the community solar programs is even people who leased, as long as they thought they were going to be staying in the area and in the same utility territory, they could buy into a small-scale solar project. And it was portable. They could take it with them wherever they were in their utilities territory, or they could sell it if they were going to move. So I think community solar has played a really important role in Vermont. Vermont's adopting solar, but it has sort of, it has unfortunately really been all but has had the dust, it's all but gone. We have, at the Energy Clinic, we actually spearheaded putting in about half a dozen community solar projects, and we could see the excitement it generated in communities. Under both the Public Utility Commission's net metering rates, they've been continually cutting the net metering rates so that we don't see much of a future for net metering as well as community solar, at least the way things have been going. And even H289 expressly gets rid of community solar in the legislation.
Hmm. Do you think that I believe
is unfortunate, and I think that was one of the things the environmental advocates felt that they had to give on, but also saw that it wasn't any longer viable under the PUC's rules.
So can we change those PUC rules? My understanding is that the legislature is the people who gave them the set of rules, and I guess in very brief, those rules say least cost while still reliable source.
Yes, and it still says the law does say that the PUC is to be promoting net metering, but doing so in a way that balances least cost, sort of energy equity, but at the same time, they do have a mandate to be promoting net metering, which I would argue under their latest set of rules does not. Their latest cuts to the net metering rate is not consistent with that legislative mandate.
Oh, good.
But we also see that the legislature has chose to address some of these issues through the renewable energy standard and this new proposal for the renewable energy standard. So what I would say at this point in time, the most important thing at the state level, and I'm going to say the same thing at the federal level, at this specific point in time with 5 months to go for the elections, the single most helpful thing people can do is find their role in these elections. Make a difference. It doesn't mean you have to go knock on doors. You can help a campaign in a lot of different ways. And I would also, just as kind of I was saying about at the statewide level, pick a campaign. If it's at the federal level, if you can do it, if your candidate is a shoo-in where you live, then perhaps you have the ability to go help in another state. But it also doesn't have to be the big races. Secretary of State races are incredibly important. As we've seen in the last couple of elections, the Secretary of State's office are the ones who ensure kind of that elections run smoothly and legally And there's so many different ways to get involved in the upcoming elections.
Look at that. We've gone from electricity to getting the wheels of power in people that are going to use it correctly from our perspective.
Well, it does all come down. And it's important to know the specifics, and I am happy to come back and talk more about energy and electricity specifically. But I think so much rides in the balance right now, and it's important for people to understand that and get energized.
And before we let you go, one way to do that, we mentioned, our really local listeners here in Windsor County, we broadcast into Orange County as well. But if Dick McCormick has been your senator, there are a number of people running to take over that seat. There are a couple of incumbents that are also running. To really, when you have a chance to query them during the campaign and about their environmental sort of record and how they feel about these bills that we've been talking to today, and that may help you decide who you think would maybe carry on the legacy of an environmental activist legislator as Dick McCormick has been. Hey, we've only got about 9 minutes left in the show, but I certainly appreciate you, Jenny, taking some time out of your busy day to join us here on Green Zine.
Yes,
my pleasure.
We will have to have you back again, and because there's obviously lots to discuss that we haven't gotten to. But this has been marvelous, and thank you very much for raising your hand and joining us.
Well, thank you for keeping, sort of everyone in South Royalton and beyond educated on these really important issues.
Well, yeah. You're very welcome. Thanks. All right. Look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And I have two links up on our site. One is a list of the senators that need to be contacted. And I think even if you're in Dick McCormick's territory and that's your senator, then I bet you could reach out to people that weren't in your senator. You wouldn't probably have as much clout with them. But I think that letting all these senators that are listed know that we would like to see this House 289 pass, because it just moves us to 100% renewable energy instead of 2035 back to 2030, and it requires the utility companies to really get in gear and do something about making the grid work so that you can have more renewable energy. There's also a VPIRG link, a big long thing. If you just highlight and click on it, it will take you there, which is something that will allow you to directly make contact through VPIRG to all of those different senators.
Yeah, and just real quickly on that front, it's going to be a little bit more of a lift to override the bill from the Senate side, in that we have lost two senior senators in the last 6 to 8 weeks. There is a vacancy, I believe, in Bennington County. Senator Dick Sears passing away just in the last few days. Senator Dick Mazza also passed away a couple of months ago, and there is someone in his place at the moment. So that's in Grand Isle County, Senator Julo, Senator Chittenden from Chittenden Southeast, and Senator Renner from Chittenden North. So if you know folks that live in those districts, Chittenden North, Chittenden Southeast, and also in Grand Isle, those would be folks that you might want to urge their senators to get on board. With only a few minutes left to go, I did want to just reference that, there are some electric taxis, and New York City had electric taxis back in the 1890s, in the 1890s, that is. And it actually started. Yeah, I thought you'd get a laugh out of that. It started off kind of pretty well. It went from just a couple of taxis to 100 taxis. But by 1899, the gas cars and the diesel were starting to come in and they got phased out. And current EV taxi development in New York has also been stymied a little bit. In fact, EVs have been getting kind of a tough rap lately, both politically and economically. So we'll have to see how that develops over time. Just real quick, in New York City, Henry, you spent a lot of time there when you were young. Governor Hochul has pressed the pause button on a bill that was going to take effect at the end of June for congestive pricing. This does exist in some other cities around the world, most notably London, England, started this, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. The effort is to limit the amount of gas cars or number of vehicles in general entering a downtown area, of course, cutting back on pollution, but also making it much more bike and pedestrian friendly. And the congestive pricing would serve as a deterrent, but those who continue to want to pay, in the case of New York City, $15 to enter below 60th Street, that money would go towards transportation infrastructure, particularly the upgrading of the subway system and also the upgrading of charging stations for both mass transit and for EV vehicles. But unfortunately, at the moment, New York would have been the lead city, the first time ever congested pricing in the United States. And that has been put on hold by the governor, who changed positions based on what she said were the economics of lower income workers, who this $15 fee would be an onerous add-on. So that's kind of what's happening in the transportation world. Henry, we still have got about 3 minutes to go. Let's fill it up.
Yeah. So there is two more articles that are up on the website. Just will briefly comment on. One of them is on 10 ways that you can reduce plastics, microplastics,
yes,
in your living space. New York Times article that covers that. And there's another link for a very interesting concept of, okay, if we're going to use more energy, how do we make it so that it is local electricity, it's local energy. And the secret to that in sub-Saharan Africa is that there are literally millions of people who don't have any electricity at all. And as they try to bring them electricity, they're starting with like households that have a solar panel and maybe a battery, and then on to maybe a little bit bigger array in the cluster of houses all using it. And then the neighbors do one of those down the road, and then they link the two of them together, and then they say, well, we'll set up some communication so that we can borrow electricity from you and you can borrow it from us, but we aren't doing a central grid with all the power having to flow over it.
Right.
And that is actually, it's kind of like, it's like the old landline telephones that took copper cable in third world countries. They never built those infrastructures. They just went right to cell phones and let the technology make the calls rather than paying a lot of infrastructure money to make it happen.
Yeah, interesting the way that's all played. It makes me think of that the book, A True Story, and also a film made out of it. I think it was called The Boy Who Harnessed Wind, and that also took place in Africa. Maybe I'll send you a link for that, Henry. We're down to our last minute, and we want to make sure that we acknowledge the folks that keep Green Zine on the air these many years and all the interesting guests that Henry's been able to line up, and we've got more coming as we go into the summer. Our underwriters here include that the moving solar company, Solaflex. They've got the trackers also building a local economy known as Bale. Check them out at balevt.org. Royal Trail Works, Our good friend Daniel Leibowitz, he's probably riding his bike right now. Upper Pass Beer Company, located in Tunbridge. The First Branch Coffee Company just renewing their underwriting credit. Thank you, Lauren, right here in South Royalton. Solar Fest, and finally out in Tunbridge, the White River Land Collaborative. Henry, with 10 seconds to go, looking forward to talking with you again next week, and hopefully they'll get that glider out of the trees.
Yes, it may happen by next week. Who knows?
All right. See you next time.